for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody
Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, Friday, May 22nd, 2015, as we come to you live at the beginning of this Memorial Day weekend. It's TGIF, and not only TGIF, but TGIAHW. Thank God it's a holiday weekend. Today's show is a special gift of support, information, and hopefully inspiration on the topic of loving, living, and preparing with a reluctant partner. As a life coach, I'm often contacted by people who are hurting because a partner, a loved one, a family member, a friend, or someone else whom they deeply care about is either unaware of the global crisis or maybe aware but just doesn't want to talk about it with them. Now, for someone who may have never experienced this, it might sound like a minor issue that people should just get over and not make a big deal of. But the reality is, it really is a big deal. It's a big deal if you've been researching the collapse of industrial civilization, catastrophic climate change, the nuclear radiation threat, and the increasing loss of civil liberties in this country, and many other issues that have become life-threatening. So as a result of working with folks for a number of years who are in this situation, I created a special workshop called Love in the Long Emergency to deal with these issues. But not everyone can attend a workshop, and most people need some immediate suggestions. So I decided to write an entire chapter on this topic and make it the first chapter in my 2015 book, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, Cultivating the Relationships We Need to Thrive. And today on this show, I'm going to share that chapter with you. No, I'm not going to sit here and read it to you, although I might read parts of it, but I'd like to offer some sections of the chapter, and I very much want people to call me and ask questions or make comments about the topic. Because, you know, this is such an important topic that is so hurtful for so many people. Now, if you want to read the entire chapter online, you can find it at my website, carolynbaker.net. We're going to be taking callers later in the show, and I'd love to hear your comments or questions on the topic. But I'd like to begin our discussion with a poem written by a highly underrated American poet named William Stafford. The poem is entitled, A Ritual to be Read to Each Other. Here's the poem. If you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. For there is many a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug that lets the fragile sequence break, sending with shouts the horrible errors of childhood storming out to play through the broken dike. As elephants parade holding each other's tail, but if one wanders, the circus won't find the park, I call it cruel and maybe the root of all cruelty to know what occurs but not recognize the fact. And so I appeal to a voice, to something shadowy, a remote, important region in all who talk. Though we could fool each other, we should consider, lest the parade of our mutual life get lost in the dark. For it is important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes, no, or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep. I especially like the first and last verses of this poem because they seem so relevant to relationships. Again, the first verse. If you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. And the last verse, for it is important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes, no, or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep. Over and over, I see the global crisis and the issues around it entering our human relationships like a cloud of smoke. Now, it can be a cloud of beautifully smelling incense that brings people closer together in deep intimacy, or it can be almost like a cloud of tear gas that makes people cough and choke and sputter and makes it almost impossible to breathe, and of course, drive people apart. Today, after more than a decade of researching collapse and talking with countless individuals about it, I've come to believe that one of its most wrenching aspects may be a situation in which one partner in a relationship is well aware of collapse and actively preparing for it, while the other partner is resistant to the notion of any future that is not brimming with optimism and infinite opportunities for a rich, fulfilling life. Now, the disparity does not appear to adhere to gender stereotypes. In other words, sometimes women are collapse-aware and actively preparing while their male partner is resistant to their efforts. And in other cases, male partners have been researching collapse thoroughly and are at their wits' end in their attempts to convince a female partner to join them in preparing. In either case, the divergence of perspectives is agonizing for both individuals. And this also occurs not only between partners and spouses, but between family members and friends. I also have a chapter in my 2015 book, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, in which I address talking to children about collapse. But I notice that when children are involved in a relationship between partners who have diverse views on collapse, the pain is intensified and the stakes are higher. One partner might say, but we must prepare the kids for dealing with a daunting future. Well, the other partner might say, you know, if you talk to the kids about this, you'll really terrify them, and I won't permit that. The resistant or reluctant partner may accuse the other of just going through a phase or overreacting or even being crazy. Both partners may dig in more stubbornly, or they may begin doubting their own perspective, or they may become laden with sorrow and begin feeling victimized. A wide range of responses are possible in such divergent perspectives when you have these between partners. But one thing is constant. One thing is unarguable. It hurts. Now, it's very important to understand that all relationships have issues. Bring together two people who grew up in industrial civilization, and you'll have a relationship with a variety of issues, some more challenging than others. We shouldn't naively believe that our relationship issues began with differing views about collapse or near-term extinction. And we should also understand that whatever issues were already present in the relationship will be triggered and exacerbated by that conflict. In many cases, if couples weren't in a conflict about collapse, if that particular issue, they would be in a conflict about other issues, and often are. In other situations, the topic of collapse is such a hot button that it resurrects what were deemed to be long-deceased ghosts in the relationship and teases them up to the surface. You know, today the issue might be collapse, but it's loaded with residue from previous or ongoing issues. The so-called terrifying talk of a collapse-aware partner may trigger in the reluctant partner a constellation of feelings and memories regarding other painful issues in the relationship that are unresolved or only partially resolved. Just when one partner believes he's forgiven the other for an old wound, the issue of collapse may ignite not only a chasm between the two people in the relationship related to that issue, but also stir the troubled waters of some or many prior hurts. So for this reason, I decided a few years ago to create a specific workshop for partners and families called Relationships in the Long Emergency. When I'm working with partners in workshops or by phone, I like to have a sense of what some of the underlying issues in the relationship are, entirely separate from collapse, so I invite people to share those with me. Without exception, I find that those issues are at play on some level also in the conflict about collapse. I often ask people to go back in time to the first mention of collapse and notice what happened between them, and if possible, recall the feelings that each of them experienced. Probably the same emotions have continued and intensified since the first mention, and those may have triggered still other emotions. And then I like to explore how the conflict has affected the relationship and whether or not other family members are involved, such as children, in-laws, and siblings. Very importantly, I want to know what other situations in the relationship might have triggered similar feelings. And I might ask each partner to remember another situation in which they felt something like this with their partner. The next curiosity I have is the degree of fear that exists within both partners. I want to know from the collapse-aware partner what they're afraid will happen if the non-prepping partner doesn't get on board. Likewise, I want to ask the non-prepping partner what they fear will happen if the prepping partner continues on their current path. Exploring these fears is enormously important and invariably will lead to other fault lines in the relationship. A common response from the concerned, reluctant partner is that they feel jealous of the time and attention that are being given to collapse by the prepping partner. It's not uncommon to hear the non-prepping partner say that they almost feel as if their partner is having an affair and that they're being excluded. The prepping partner may already sense that, the other person feels this way, and they might feel somewhat guilty as if they're sneaking around and reading books and watching documentaries or having conversations with other collapse-aware people behind the back of their partner. A kind of indulging in collapse porn, if you will. Another common response is that one feels as if one's partner is mentally ill or has lost it in relation to collapse. For the reluctant partner, this can be terrifying. And for the prepping partner, the sense that one significant other believes that they're going crazy is exceedingly painful. For both individuals, a profound loneliness ensues. Both partners feel that they can't discuss and share the feelings that are most important to them with the other around this issue. And in this situation, it's extremely important for the prepping partner to have other people to talk with about preparation so that the immediate family is not the only place for doing this. In most cases, it's more likely that the prepping partner will have venues for doing this than the non-prepping partner, who usually feels embarrassed about telling anyone about the preparations that their partner is making. One woman told me that she was exceedingly concerned about friends and neighbors discovering the passion with which her husband was storing food and water and acquiring medical supplies in preparation for collapse. She knew that her husband wasn't crazy, but she was certain that people outside the family would believe he was. Now, navigating this delicate walk on eggshells is inherently challenging, but more so if one or the other partner or both are actively hurling hostile barbs at the other. Responses like, "Are you freaking crazy?" or "I'm seriously worried about your mental health," or "If you're so worried about the future of your kids, why are you discussing this with them?" are absolutely not helpful. Nor are facial expressions and body language that communicate hostility or scorn. When I work with couples in this situation, from the non-prepping partner, I want to hear what is most challenging about entertaining the notion of collapse. I notice if this person's well-being or livelihood is highly invested in the status quo. What would they lose by awakening to collapse? What changes in their life would they have to make in order to sleep well at night and keep their conscience clean, and what would that cost them on a variety of levels? How have they been personally wounded by this topic? How has the topic brought to the surface other painful experiences from their past? what personal collapse within themselves might they be warding off? In summary, how does the whole notion of the end of life as they've known it strike terror into their hearts and threaten their relationship with their partner and their entire family? Now, conversely, from the prepping partner, I might want to know if there's anything familiar about their situation. Being the loner who sees what's really going on and maybe trying to tell someone only to be ignored, shamed, or scorned. Have they experienced other situations where they saw beneath the surface presentation of things to a deeper reality? There may be a replication here that does not suggest any pathology on the part of the prepping partner, but being able to notice the repetition of a pattern might prove useful at some point. Now, let me just stop here and remind you all that later in the show, I'm going to be inviting people to call in with comments or questions. This topic is very painful for the people dealing with it, and one reason that I wanted to devote this show to the topic today is to provide a place where people can ask questions or make comments. So later we'll be opening the show to callers, and again, the number that we always use for calling is 888-874-4888. I'll be giving that number many times in the show. Now, as for the reluctant partner in this situation, in no way would I pathologize them. They are vulnerable. They are a wounded human being like we all are, who, for whatever reasons, is profoundly threatened by the topic of collapse and what it would mean for their well-being and for the well-being of relationships they hold most dear. You know, everyone is clueless about collapse at some point. Everyone's journey is unique and should be respected, even if we don't happen to agree with it. Many partners of non-preppers erroneously believe that if they can just amass enough proof of collapse, then their partner will be compelled to see the wisdom of their preparation. The collapse-aware partner thinks, boy, if he just watches this documentary, he'll get it. Or if she just reads this superbly researched article, I'm sure she'll finally understand. What both need to grasp is that the conflict is almost never an intellectual one. Rather, it's an emotional can of worms evoked by one person adopting a different worldview from the other. And I think it's time for us to take a music break and hear a song that echoes some of the emotion and pain that comes up for loved ones struggling with different perspectives on the global crisis. Here's Howie Day with Collide.
Dawn is breaking, a light shining through. You're barely waking, and I'm tangled up in you. Face lost my place. I'm close behind. Finally find you and I collide. Finally find you and I collide. You finally find you and I collide.
That was Howie Day singing Collide, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm Carolyn Baker, your host, and today we're talking about being in relationship, whether a partner relationship or any kind of relationship with a loved one who's not on the same page with us on the topic of the global crisis. I want you to call me a little later in the show with your questions or comments at 888-874-4888. Again, that's 888-874-4888. I'd love to hear from you on this topic because I know there are endless questions about it and endless experiences. So please call me. Again, the number 888-874-4888. In July, we're going to have on this show Becca Martinson, partner of blogger and creator of the Crash Course, Chris Martinson. And in a 2010 article, Dealing with a Reluctant Partner, Becca shares their experience as a couple coming to terms with collapse from 2002 going forward. This is an excellent personal story from Becca, and you can find it by simply Googling the title of the article. It is, again, Dealing with a Reluctant Partner. Dealing with a Reluctant Partner by Becca Martinson. You can just go ahead and Google that, and you'll find it very easily. An excerpt from the article is in the first chapter of my book, but as I said, you can find the entire article online. In the article, Becca recounts her story of Chris coming to her with information about collapse and saying to her, one of the first things I believe he said was, "I need you to understand this." Now, that may at first sound demanding, but whenever we state what we need from a person with whom we have an intimate relationship, we put ourselves in a vulnerable position. As long as we're trying to convince a partner about what they should know or believe or do, we're attempting to be in control. The moment we say, "I need," we let go of control and take an emotional risk. So there's an upside and a downside to the conflict. In a situation where one partner gets it about collapse and the other doesn't, the turbulent aspect of the conflict is that it is painful, unsettling, disruptive, and terrifying. The transformative aspect of it, the opportunity in it, is that if either or both partners are willing to engage in the emotional and spiritual work on themselves that the conflict is urgently clamoring for them to attend to, they will probably be forever altered by it. As a result, they may become more whole, more empowered, more resilient, and compassionate human beings, whether they do so in the relationship with each other or not. Will people get hurt? Yes, indeed. But they're already getting hurt. Might the family fracture and fall apart? Perhaps. But it might have fallen apart anyway over some other issues. On the other hand, the relationship might not end, and in fact, it may become more robust than ever as a result of having weathered the storm. As I mentioned a moment ago, Becca Martinson is going to be on this show in July, and of course, I'll be publicizing that show widely, and Becca and I will take the discussion of her article much further. Now, I'm going to invite anyone from this point on to call in who would like to ask a question, to make a comment about loving, living, and preparing with a reluctant partner or family member or friend. The number again is 888-874-4888. I'd love to hear from you. And we're talking today about this topic. What is it like when one partner in a relationship or maybe another family member or a friend is collapse aware of the possibility of near-term extinction, catastrophic climate change, but the other person in this connection does not want to hear what they have to say? This is a very, very painful topic, but it's not a topic for which there are no options. There are many, many ways to deal with this. Not all of them result in happily ever after, but they may result in the deep emotional and spiritual growth of the people involved. Now, here's something I really, really want to emphasize. What is most needed in this painful situation is not what I call case building, but deep, honest verbalizations of tender emotions. In my relationships in the long emergency workshops, I find that having each partner go off by themselves in solitude, taking space, and writing a letter to the other is a crucial exercise. For example, for the partner who's preparing for collapse, the letter should contain the following. Their feelings must be named. For example, they could say something like, "When you refuse to talk to me about the future, I feel sad or abandoned or frustrated or scared because," and whatever that reason is for them. Very clear statements must be made about what they want from their partner. These requests may never be fulfilled, but that's not the point of the exercise. In stating exactly what the collapse-aware partner wants from the non-prepping partner, they stop being the professor who's determined to teach the other about collapse and just become a vulnerable ally who speaks from the heart about what they long for from the other person. For the non-prepping partner, the letter should contain feelings they experience when the other speaks about collapse or when they see their partner investing time, energy, and money into preparation. For example, "When I see you spending so much time on this, I feel," whatever the emotions are, "because," and whatever that reason is. They must make very clear statements about what they want from their partner. In stating what they want, they stop being a rebellious student who won't listen to the professor and accept their worldview. The reluctant, non-prepping partner must speak from the heart and state what they want from the other, allowing for feelings of vulnerability, frustration, irritation, resentment, and loss. And at a later time, I invite the partners to exchange their letters and read them silently in a private space, after which they journal about what they experienced in reading the letter from the other person. Then the partners come back together and share what it was like for each to write their letter and what it was like to receive the letter from the other. I coach them in how to do this authentically and from their bodies. Body language is extremely important as they communicate with each other. Open body posture, direct eye contact, and attention to sensations within one's own body are crucial factors. The goal is not the communication of thoughts and rebuttals, but rather deep, heartfelt emotion. The end result of this process is impossible to predict. Nobody knows where it's going to go. It may lead to much deeper intimacy, or it may reveal that the situation is untenable for both partners. Suffice it to say that partners in conflict over collapse are sitting on the cutting edge of both tragedy and transformation, or something in between that they might find a way to live with. As Becca Martinson says in her article, it's fine to disagree or agree to disagree. It's also fine to ask for the other partner's blessing to continue on the path of preparation, even though they're not on board. The pivotal issue is not so much whether the reluctant partner joins the other in preparation, but that they not attempt to impede the other person. Now, while a conflict over the reality of collapse and the need to prepare for it or not may be similar to other issues between relationship partners, and while it may evoke issues that other relationship conflicts frequently evoke, I believe that this particular conflict runs deeper in the human psyche than many others. Why? Because to understand and to prepare for collapse is to grasp the magnitude of the changes that our future holds and to literally stare death in the face. First, if we understand the severity of the collapse of industrial civilization, we implicitly understand that we may not survive physically. In sharing our knowledge of collapse with another person, especially a life partner, we're literally asking them to come along with us on a journey which may end our lives and theirs. Furthermore, if we sense, as I do, that all of humanity knows in its collective psyche that we are well into collapse, then by naming it as such, we agree to stand up in a sea of humans in denial and beg them to also name what they already know and are determined to ignore or minimize. Now, as you may recall, this is the path of so many philosophical and ethical giants in history, like Socrates, Jesus, the Gnostics, countless heretics burned at the stake in the Middle Ages, Galileo, Sophie Scholl of Nazi Germany's White Rose Society, Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., and more. Well, I see we have a caller, and it's Brian from St. Paul. Brian, talk to us.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Brian.
So, I've been reading your book, and I loved your chapter on this, all the relationship stuff. And you go into detail on the best conversations or what you can do. But my thoughts are, how do you maintain a conversation long enough that people can get into? Because it doesn't feel like there's enough of a culture or a community, or even the masses can talk about just their feelings for so long. And that's what I feel is one of the biggest issues.
Well, you're absolutely right, Brian. Thank you for that question. We live in a culture where people can't talk about their feelings about much of anything for more than 5 minutes, if that. And so it's really important that we have places where we can talk with other people. And sometimes we find those in small groups like permaculture groups or different classes here and there that might be touching on this topic or moving around the edges of it. And with partners, you know, it's like if this is something that the person won't even be able to talk about for 5 minutes, that's pretty disturbing. That's pretty painful. In that case, you know, you might just write a letter to the person and just give it to them and say, here's something I want you to read later and I'd like us to talk about it. That might open the door a little bit, give them some ways in which they can begin to express. But you're absolutely right. And this is what I discover with lots of people who contact me for life coaching. Sometimes what they're just really seeking more than anything is a place where they can talk about these topics. And I wish I could say to you, Brian, and to everybody who asked me this question, go out there, go down to 33rd Street, number 546, and there's a door and walk through it and there's all these people who will talk to you about this. But it's, you know, it's really, really hard to find folks. And so online connections have been really helpful for a lot of people. There are some wonderful pages on Facebook, the Near-Term Human Extinction Group, the Near-Term Human Extinction Love Group, and the Whistling in the Dark Group, which is specifically for families and parents. So those are my ideas about this. I'm sorry that I can't give you better information, but I really thank you for calling.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Stay safe.
Okay.
Bye now.
Likewise. So, you know, no one should be judged because they can't go and talk about this topic. They just can't go there. Nor should anyone be declared a saint because they can, you know. We all have different levels of tolerance and ability to deal with this. I put in this chapter, I put a little snippet from a poem by Theodore Refke. It's called The Waking. And I love what it says. He says, I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. I feel my fate in what I cannot fear. I learn by going where I have to go. This shaking keeps me steady. I should know. What falls away is always and is near. I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. I learn by going where I have to go. And so, you know, it's like we don't have any guarantees. I think what Refke is trying to say, we don't have any guarantees of the outcome. We're in completely new territory, and we don't know what the outcome is going to be, but we learn by going where we have to go. And I think we all should appreciate that we're in a completely unprecedented time in history. I mean, how many couples 5,000 years ago had to sit down and talk about, gee, you know, we're facing the end of the world maybe. What do you think we should do about it? Or how do you want to be present with each other as we go through this? We're really at a very unique time in history. People haven't done this before, really. And so we should be very patient with ourselves, know that there's no really right way to do it, and know that we're doing the best we can. Now, in a perfect world, these exercises that I suggested could lead to a dramatic healing and harmony between partners, and sometimes they do. In a not-so-perfect world, they could simply facilitate two people with wildly different perspectives on collapse, finding ways to coexist, cooperate, and on really good days, commit to loving each other anyway. I don't wish to imply that there's always a way to resolve a dilemma. God knows there isn't always a way. I've worked with many couples who simply can't abide with the disparity of perspectives between them and their partner, and they find it absolutely necessary to exit the relationship. I've also worked with many who are willing to make compromises and return repeatedly to the love that they still share with each other as their ultimate navigation system. Their ultimate GPS is their love. However, it should be emphasized that contrary to the delusion perpetuated by this culture, love does not conquer all. Many people love each other deeply but simply can't reconcile their differences, a very painful reality indeed, but such is the human condition. We have Thomas from Sacramento. Talk to me, Thomas.
Actually, this is Peter from Santa Cruz. I must have multiplied myself since
Sacramento. Oh, you did. Well, maybe you're a multiple personality. One day you're Peter, and one day you're Thomas.
There you go.
Okay. Hi, Peter. Talk to us.
I have a problem with that relationship with myself. And
part of me
doesn't want to talk about all this collapse and near-term extinction, and the other part of me does. And is there a chapter in your book about how to talk to yourself about this?
Well, the whole book is kind of that, yes. But what's your question?
Specifically, Paul, the last caller, I felt like I wanted more of you talking to, you know, the real heartfelt, dang it, here's my spouse and I just, or partner, and I just don't know how to even begin the conversation or additional possible ways of making that challenging initial connection. I don't know, when that call ended, I just didn't feel like I got the answer I wanted to hear.
Yeah, I didn't feel like I gave the answer I wanted to give, because the answer I want to give is like, do these three things. You know, if you do these three things or these 10 things, it'll fix it. And, you know, what I'm learning as I work with people over the years on this topic is everybody's situation is different. There are different things that work for different people. And when I work with folks one-on-one, you know, sometimes we can find what those are. And then sometimes there are not solutions. Sometimes people do have to go their separate ways or agree to disagree, as I said, and, you know, and just kind of move along in the relationship in a less than perfect way. But, you know, I like to keep coming back to this isn't just about two people getting along together or staying in a relationship together. It's about what happens to those two individual people as a result of this conflict. How does it make them more whole? How does it make them bigger people? How does it make their hearts bigger? And how does it enlarge their capacity to love or their capacity to take care of themselves? Or whatever the situation might be calling each of us to develop in ourselves, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I think in the framework of sharing with my partner, I guess what I want to say to Paul is this feeling of, hi, honey, I really want us to love fully, and I'm scared because mm-hmm. there's this topic that I'm afraid to talk about with you, because I'm afraid even to talk about it with myself, and I want to talk about this with you, but I'm scared.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's good enough for a stop.
Well, you know, thank you for that, because that is what I am constantly urging people to do, is to be vulnerable, and that's the scariest part. You know, to go to that other person and say, I really love you, and I'm scared. I'm scared to bring up this topic. I'm scared of where this topic is going to take us. I'm scared it's going to, you know, really stay in between us so that we can't be closer. And I'm feeling really vulnerable. And see, that's the place a lot of people don't want to go. And so the way they avoid that is to shove more articles in the face of their partner. Read this, read this. If you read this, you'll understand. Or whatever it is they do to try to convince the person. And what it really comes down to is showing that vulnerability. And, you know, sometimes that's a vulnerability that's needed to be shown by that person to their partner for a really long time. And so in that way, this conflict about collapse is an excellent opportunity. And if people can get vulnerable with each other, very often it brings them much more deeply in love than they already are.
Yeah. Yeah, almost like that vulnerability is the door handle. You know, and then talking about it is opening the door to that we gotta, I find it good to go there to that vulnerability.
Absolutely. I think door handle is a really good way of saying it, you know, and without that vulnerability, the relationship just isn't going to go anywhere except, as the song says, colliding, you know, constantly butting heads. And what they need to be doing is not butting heads, but opening hearts.
Right, and that next step is, so let's just play this out if we can. That okay, so honey, I love you and I'm scared. There's mm-hmm. a topic I need to talk to you about, but I'm afraid it's going to be challenging for us, and I'm afraid it's going to lead us to sadness.
And maybe by that time, the other person is already crying.
Yeah,
and
right.
And sadness, great, you know, great, there's sadness here, there's tears, there's sorrow, there's grief, you know.
Yeah, we haven't practiced any of this communicating with sadness and grief.
That's right.
And yeah, and so here we are scared together.
Yeah, yeah, and what's that like to be scared together, you know?
Right, these foundational things that we've avoided and blocked off, that can we be sad together?
Yes. Oh, I love that. Can we be sad together? And what is it like? And maybe just stop the conversation right there. Hey,
right.
We're not going to talk about collapse right now. What's it like to be sad together? Oh, my God. Have we ever done this before? Wow.
Right.
When was the last time we did this? Oh, we've never done this. Ooh,
right. It got forced on us. It got forced on us when somebody died or something, and then we play out this human pretend sadness game of funerals and stuff that I don't know in my life hasn't led to people getting deep and really dealing with sadness together. It's kind of going through this little process.
Right, right. Yeah, so just that in itself. And, you know, these changes, I want to really emphasize this. Very small changes can be monumental. So, wow, we got sad together, and all of a sudden, that's more important for our love and our relationship than whether we agree on collapse.
Right. Yeah, that could be one of the early gifts of this, is just to realize some kind of foundational things that we can put in place that will prepare us for, you know, what collapse has to bring.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Thomas, Peter, whatever your name is. I'm so glad you called into the show. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Just keep on doing your thing, girl.
Okay, thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Love these calls. I love it when people call in and they offer some suggestions, and they even talk to the person who called in before, and it's kind of like this community where we're all sharing and you know, expressing with each other and helping each other in a sense as we walk this journey that humans haven't really walked before ever in the same way. So as I've written in detail elsewhere, the ending of a marriage or a committed relationship is one of a host of rites of passage, or I call them initiations, that we mortals repeatedly encounter as we inhabit a physical body. Divorce, terminal illness, loss of career, a bankruptcy, a severe injury, all of these crises are naturally encountered in the course of the human experience, but on a deeper level, these are invitations from the soul to explore our own depths, just like sitting together with your partner and getting sad together is an invitation. And so a rite of passage is more than an ordeal. It's a spiritual and emotional journey to the deeper self in each of us. But there are some things that a rite of passage requires. And I would certainly say that when we come to an impasse in a relationship over the topic of collapse, we are in a rite of passage. And here are some things that are required of us in any rite of passage. A willingness to find meaning in it and being open to the lessons that this experience is trying to teach us. A willingness to find meaning in it and being open to the lessons the experience is trying to teach us. Secondly, a support system of trusted others who may not grasp that we're enduring a rite of passage, but they'll be present with us in our ordeal. Thirdly, a welcome home celebration of our ordeal at pivotal moments in the journey. So just as we have people we can talk to, those people should also be able to congratulate us and say, I'm on your team. Well done. Good for you that you're walking into these scary waters. And finally, a rite of passage, any rite of passage, requires that we are willing to become spiritual elders. Now, that's not some esoteric, weird thing. It just means that we're willing to find meaning in the journey and invariably acquire wisdom that we couldn't get anywhere else without this experience. Part of the completion of the journey, then, is a commitment to utilizing our wisdom to nurture our fellow earthlings of all ages and pay forward the fruits of our experience. You know, if you have this kind of experience in a relationship of any kind, this kind of impasse that we're talking about today here on the show, whatever happens is less important than what you learn from it and what you can share with other people who are going through a similar situation. I've noticed in working with many couples that the most effective means of communicating one's perspective with one's partner is by doing so emotionally, not intellectually, as Peter and I were talking about when he called. So it's very tempting to assume that if you just get the other person to comprehend all the facts, they'll finally awaken to the validity of what you're saying and enthusiastically join you in preparation. In reality, the absolute opposite is true. It's from the heart that we really come together and connect. So as we can infer from Becca Martinson's article, Living with a Reluctant Partner, talking about the impact of collapse in her relationship with Chris, people do not reject the reality of collapse because they don't have enough information. They reject it because some part of them already knows that it's happening, and they're absolutely terrified when anyone, especially their partner, begins discussing it. So asking a partner to read one more book or watch one more documentary on collapse is probably going to be a waste of energy. Attending together a workshop or a speaking event presented by a famous collapse personality might be a bit more productive, but again, this is usually an intellectual exercise in which the emphasis is going to be on gaining more information. Instead, I encourage the partner who's preparing to schedule a time with their reluctant partner and make sure they'll not be interrupted during that time. And this is very precious time because it's the riskiest, most frightening thing the prepping partner has ever done in their life, or at least in the relationship. And they must be completely willing to be emotionally vulnerable. So they might sit across from each other and, you know, they might begin the conversation this way. The prepping partner might begin by saying, well, we've been in a conflict recently about our differing views of the future. From my perspective, what I see happening is, and then say what you see happening. And it seems like from your perspective, you see, and say what you think you see the person perceiving the future. Then check out if this is accurate. Am I hearing you correctly? It's really good to stop when we're having these kinds of conversations. Stop and check it out. Am I hearing you correctly? Do you not see the same thing I'm seeing? I know that I may have sometimes been pushy or, you know, trying to convince you that my perspective is correct, and I apologize for that, but I don't want to be that way. You have every right to believe what you want to believe about the future, but what I want you to hear today is, and then there is the opportunity to present your feelings. I need you to understand. I want you to hear. And as I said before, the intention is to communicate one's deepest feelings. So the next statement might be something like, I want you to hear how deeply sad I am that we don't share this perspective. I'm also terribly scared because I want us to be as prepared as possible for the future, and I'm frightened that we won't be. The most important piece of this communication is not whether or not you use the correct words, but whether or not you, the prepping partner, allow yourself to express your authentic feelings. If you're sad, don't try to make yourself cry. Just go with whatever comes. And if tears do come, let them. Absolutely essential in this communication is that you speak from your heart. Now, fully expect that this kind of honest communication is going to open the door to other issues in the relationship, because when you make yourself vulnerable, you're letting the other person know that they too have permission to speak honestly. So other issues may come up that seem to have nothing to do with collapse. Like, I've been asking you for months to fix the garage door, or You really need to be a stay-at-home mom and, you know, not go to work anymore. It would really help us all if you would do that. Or the opposite. You need to stop staying at home and go out and get a job. You know, whatever. So we have just a couple minutes left in this show, and I didn't get through everything that I wanted to say today, but the entire text of this article, or the first chapter of my book, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, the chapter entitled Loving, Living, and Preparing with a Reluctant Partner, is at my website at carolynbaker.net. Now, next week on this show, we're going to have Jennifer Hines with us, who's the author and narrator of the YouTube presentation, The Arctic Methane Monster. And Jennifer is going to share with us not just the hard science of an ice-free Arctic, but also her perspective on finding meaning and purpose in this unprecedented global catastrophe. And again, we'll be taking callers. Feel free to email me with questions or comments about today's show or anything else, carolyn@carolynbaker.net. Have a safe and relaxing Memorial Day weekend, and we'll see you next week right here on the Lifeboat Hour.